you know, you go through those trials and tribulations as an investor, as a business owner, and those ups and downs. And it's really important to get a handle of your own emotions during those times and make sure that you can focus on the solution and be solution oriented versus letting it get to you. I mean, when everything crashed in the beginning, you start to just implode a little bit emotionally, where you're like, I can't deal with this. Oh my God, this is crazy. And then you realize on the other side, it was literally the best thing that ever happened to you to take a punch in the face early like that and be able to do that and then get back up and stand back up, because it shows you mentally and emotionally, you know, what it takes.
Welcome to How to Buy Giant Apartment Buildings, the number one show about growing your family's wealth with apartment building investments. Now, here's your host, Mark Allen Kenny.
Hey everybody, welcome to How to Buy Giant Apartment Buildings. I'm Mark Allen Kenny. Our guest today is Matthew Owens. How are you doing today, Matthew?
Pretty good, man. And yourself?
Doing great. Thanks for taking the time. I appreciate you being here today. So Matthew is the owner and founder of OCG Properties, a company that specializes in value add and multifamily real estate investments, having purchased and renovated over 600 properties in high cash flow markets around the country. Matthew also helps investors develop various cash flow streams through syndications, promissory notes, and other real estate related assets. So Matthew, I'm super excited to have you on the show today. Could you tell the listeners just a little bit more about your background and how you got started in real estate?
Yeah, no problem at all, man. So it started out working at a CPA firm doing tax and audit. So you know how much fun that is, you know, doing audit and tax for other people. But I got to work on a lot of large real estate clients and looking at their books and understanding of the operations and things like that. I wish I would have known more about real estate at that time. I would have gained a lot more knowledge in wanting to learn more. But you know, you get a basic understanding of, you know, the financials and how they operate and what the most important pieces of the operations are just from that aspect. And I was sitting on the other side of a table from these guys that were just like, no problem, go buy this $10 million building. I trust you, to my CEO. And you know, I'm sitting on the wrong side of the table here. What's going on? And so I started really focusing and trying to learn everything I could about real estate. And then I ended up taking some classes on real estate, and whether it was false confidence or not, or, you know, base level, I just quit my CPA firm job. And of course that was in 2006. So I was promptly a real estate genius for about a year and a half before I got punched in the face and basically lost everything. So you learn really, really fast. And, you know, one of the biggest learning things that I went through during that time was, man, my ego is all based off of, hey, my credit score is 790. I quit my firm and I'm flipping houses all of a sudden and I'm dope. And you're like, no, you're not dope. It's the market that's dope right now. And so you start to actually realize after that crashes, like, the ups and downs of the market and what really made me focus on economics and, you know, what's happening in the market and things like that, as well as it taught me how to raise private money, because I took out about 290 grand on my credit cards because I had a great credit score at the time, made sure all my investors got paid back, and then basically tried to float and went down with the ship and lost everything. And, you know, since then though, actually now it's over 1,000 houses that we flip now, and we do about 5+ a month. We also have about 15 million to 20 million, depending on the time of year, lent out to different flippers in different markets around the country. We have a debt fund set up that we utilize for that, as well as some larger private investors that we deal with. So we don't have the outside sources, and we were alive during COVID the whole time. So still lending, but you know, we took a pause for, I think, a couple of weeks because we didn't know what the heck was going to happen. But you know, you learn the fun stuff. So in addition to that, we do a lot of value add multifamilies consistently on an annual basis, mostly smaller type projects, 19 units, 30 units. We just finished an 18 unit building basically that we bought for 400. We're into it for about 1.8 million right now, and it looks like it should be worth around 3 million. So, you know, little value add projects like that consistently, but really heavy construction. I mean, this thing we had to go through and literally reframe the entire building, but we got 18 units out of it instead of 15 units. So that worked out, you know. And, you know, the 30 unit building we did a great job on. And, you know, you look at these different strategies and you look at, hey, I got this flipping business going, I got the lending business going. And, you know, the multifamilies, once you start to see the chunks of money that can come from those things. And we utilize private investor capital to do that. But at the same time, those investors got, you know, preferred returns on the capital and then on the cash flow and then a profit on the sale as well on the back end. And so you look at those as, you know, some cash flow, but during the value add period, maybe you're looking for those chunks of money a couple years later after the major value add comes in on any of those, you know, types of projects. And I really like the middle market like that, because under a couple $1 million or $1 million in loan amount, you're seeing it very difficult for lenders to come in, unless you're dealing with local banks, to finance some of that stuff. And on decent terms, some of the local banks are like, yeah, I'll give you 5 years, 65% loan to value, you know, type stuff. And the rates are bumped a little bit, you know, compared to what the bigger stuff is, because it just isn't worth their time. And so we kind of made a business out of doing a lot of seller financing of those strategies on smaller apartment buildings, as well as single family homes. And we did it for 1031 exchange clients that come to us that have specific debt requirements and market value requirements. And we would serve it up to them on a silver platter. All systems are done with everything documented start to finish from every single system, the age of every system included in that. And then at the same time, going through and saying, here's a property with seller financing, you know, 5-7 year type term stuff. And then we started doing 15-year fully amortized terms on our seller financing on our single families to people's IRAs and 401ks and things like that. And then we sell the paper off on the secondary market, or we keep it because our profits are built into it and the cash flow is nice, you know? So it's cool to learn to kind of use a specific market segment that works well, that has a disadvantage that might be beneficial, to be able to utilize your other relationships or other people's needs to do that. And the biggest challenge that I see is, no, most people aren't operators, right? They don't want to go manage property managers. They don't want to go deal with, you know, having to deal with the management of the renovation, you know, all the problems that go with it. As an operator, you know, there's never a deal without a problem that occurs, you know? So you got to jump through hoops and be able to stick and move as an operator versus a passive cash flow investor. You know, I'm passive in multiple deals and I love those deals because I can diversify with smaller chunks of cash into multiple operators. And then I can also go through and diversify into multiple asset classes within real estate. And then I can go through and diversify in different states and things like that too, which really helps significantly with the active side and passive side. So I got the passive income over here while I'm active over here. And I think that is really important to have that kind of mix to a degree, unless, you know, or have secondary income coming in while you're trying to invest passively, right?
Yeah, absolutely. I love that. So let's talk a little bit about kind of your journey a little bit more and how you got started. So you touched on this a little bit, how you just decided to leave your job and kind of dive into flipping houses. So did you have enough income coming in either passively or actively before you left your job, or did you just quit, you know, and just dive all in?
I had about 30 grand saved and I quit.
Okay. Oh, so, wow.
my expenses were probably 5 grand a month at the time, you know?
Sure.
And I just
a little runway.
I wanted to find a way out. I actually took classes at this company at the time called Nouveau Riche, which is now Renatus, and spent 16 grand on the classes. And you know, the problem with that is that most people don't do what they should be doing active wise with that education. I actually, whether it was smart or if it was just like, I hate my job, I can't do tax and audit anymore, you know, I was just like, this is horrible. I can't sit behind a desk all day long and do this. And I still sit behind a desk to a degree. At the same time, I'm able to, you know, I'm have free to do what I want now. In the beginning, I thought, hey, oh, I'll be able to go to the gym every day and I'll have plenty of free time. And it's like literally the opposite. You're like 14-hour days every day for, you know, and I was going to 5 networking events a week, every single week for like 2 years in the beginning, developing relationships and things like that and understanding different strategies and just taking it all in, because your learning curve in the beginning is like this. And the learning curve is still like this. It's just in different aspects of investing and business and the economy and everything else. And I think it comes down to the desire to want to learn. And I think I didn't understand at the time how much risk it was to jump in full time and just be like, I'm done. And don't get me wrong, when everything was crashing, I was looking at the job boards going, I need to make like 300 a year to go back to that crap, you know, like this is not going to work. So,
yeah,
but, you know, you go through those trials and tribulations as an investor, as a business owner, and those ups and downs. And it's really important to get a handle of your own emotions during those times and make sure that you can focus on the solution and be solution oriented versus letting it get to you. I mean, when everything crashed in the beginning, you start to just implode a little bit emotionally, where you're like, I can't deal with this. Oh my God, this is crazy. And then you realize on the other side, it was literally the best thing that ever happened to you to take a punch in the face early like that and be able to do that and then get back up and stand back up, because it shows you mentally and emotionally, you know, what it takes to be able to do that. And so all the future deals, don't get me wrong, you take some future hits and you still hurts, you know, but it's a lot easier to snap yourself out of it and say immediately, I'm going to make money here and make that money back.
Yeah. I love that. So let's talk about that a little bit. So you got started, had a couple great years, and then, you know, it was the top of the market cycle, 2008 hit, 2009 hit. It sounds like you did the right thing with your investors and made your investors whole and took the sacrifice to take out that debt, that personal debt. How did you then pivot more? Because you're doing bigger stuff now, bigger multifamily, you know, value add projects. You're doing lending for other people. How did you pivot out of just single family flips into lending and some of these bigger projects after the market crashed?
So I think it started off with two duplexes and a fourplex that I bought at the same time, where I bought them for about $47,000 total. They need total rehab. I was into them for about $100,000 total, sold the fourplex for about $250,000, sold the single family homes or the duplexes for about $150,000 each. And then I was like, wow, that cash flow was better and a much bigger chunk on my money, because I was selling it based off of cash flow and things like that. And then it made my brain turn onto other multifamilies. And it was very scary at first. Luckily, over time of developing of relationships, I was setting the stage for people to want to invest in multifamilies and break down the math and learn the math of the multifamilies of how that works, so I can present it correctly and show them where the returns are, where the risks are, and things like that. And then I had to put some of my capital in the deal initially as well, just to make them feel comfortable with that project, you know. But in the beginning, I started doing joint ventures. I started taking renovation management fees and things like that to get to make sure the lights were on during that process, where, you know, on single families, we'd take a $2,500 rehab management fee or $5,000 rehab management fee every single time and do five a month. And so we're like, okay, great. We're doing great right now, you know, and we'll structure it this way. And I started doing that with the multifamilies as well, and bringing them in different ways to be able to do some of the operations and some of the workload associated with it, just so that they understood more of the deal on some of my capital investors. But I really made that shift when the resources on the capital side started outpacing the amount of deal flow that I could possibly obtain. And what's funny is that when that happened, when the capital sources just kept coming from referral after referral and me asking my investors, and that was strategic. It was planned that way on purpose. Now it snowballed into much bigger than I could have ever thought of. At the same time, when you're bringing capital in like that, you're going, I don't want to turn these people away, that they're going to go somewhere else with their money. Let me find something else to do with it. And it started to push me towards the lending business. And when I started doing lending and bringing money to people and operators in multiple markets around the country, the deal flow just started going crazy for me. And I didn't even have to market with pay by click or direct mail or anything like that anymore. The deal flow starts coming. So if you go out there and have capital sources as a lender for multifamily, for example, you start getting thrown multifamily deals and you're like, hey, I can do this on the loan. By the way, I can probably raise the capital over here or be a part of the deal or be able to actually help with the operations and that type of stuff, and throw those ideas out there for multiple operators. And you start meeting all these different operators that a lot of them may not have the full sophistication of a syndication to know how to line everything out, to know how the paperwork works and the capital raise process, and they're limited and they're stretching like crazy for that one deal and stressed about it. And you can see right away where the opportunity is to add a resource or add some knowledge or add some detailed, you know, documentation and presentation to that relationship.
Yeah, yeah, that's awesome. That makes a lot of sense, especially on the capital sources and having investors trusting you and your instincts and your knowledge of the industry on the lender side. What about the typical client within the lending business, the typical client that you're lending out to? Is there a typical kind of person or business plan that you like to see as far as single family houses or multifamily, experience level, you know, terms of the loan? What's kind of the ideal lending client for you?
So on the lending side, what we do is we do normal fix and flip loans for investors that typically have done at least a couple of deals, right? I want to see that they have, it's really more about their team than everything else, and me analyzing and vetting their construction bid and their contractor to make sure that team member doesn't falter and making sure they have enough cash in the bank and they've been responsible previously to know that, hey, they're able to float any problems that come up. We hold back 6 months of interest on our deals and the full rehab, so I'm not concerned about that. And we do construction draws like normal. But you know, I'm looking for, do they understand how to analyze the deal? Are they completely off on their renovation and their market values of these deals? We typically deal with properties in the Midwest that are, you know, $150,000 to $250,000, $350,000 loan sizes. So, and they cash flow well for the downside risk. But what's unique about us is we actually joint venture with clients. There's so many people out there that have deals that just can't get the funding for it. And they can't even, they don't even necessarily have the 10% in the deal or just interest, because we'll fund 100% of purchase and rehab up to 65% of the market value. And we'll go up to 70% if they put some skin in the game. But sometimes they don't have the interest hold or the reserves to fund part of the rehab. And they're stretching because maybe they're new, or maybe they have done a ton of deals and just don't have the capital to do it on another deal. And so we come in and say, hey, we'll fund 100% of everything. We're going to take a profit split on the back end and a preferred return on our money, just like any kind of multifamily would be on a passive side. But you never have to worry about the money. You can go and find a deal. And, you know, and a lot of times we're doing joint venture holds on these deals and refinancing with our commercial lending arm as well, and just holding properties long term. Because after flipping as many houses as I have, I think my biggest mistake was selling them, you know? So yeah. I should have held everything. I'd be done by now, you know? So
yeah. Oh, wow. That's awesome. And then do you also lend on the larger multifamily projects, or you typically handle those yourself?
So we will lend personal funds on the smaller multifamily projects, say under a couple million bucks. On the larger multifamily projects, we have multiple correspondent relationships that we work with as brokers, and we only do it in certain states. We don't do it in all the states. Any states we have to be licensed in, I don't deal with it. I don't want to do loans there, you know? So we just, there's plenty of other states to do it and plenty of cash flow states, you know? So
yeah. Awesome. That's amazing. That sounds like quite an impressive business model for sure. So I wanted to talk more about kind of the educational side of what you're doing. I know that you're working on launching a podcast this year, which is super exciting. And you've also got the 6 month real estate course. Could you talk a little bit about that course and kind of the educational stuff that you've been working on for investors?
Yeah, sure. No problem. So first, you know, we have a nonprofit organization for years, since 2008, that teaches financial education and real estate education. And we're all on Zoom now, and we run reoccurring meetings. It's called For Investors by Investors, all based out of Southern California. And we have about 6 or 7 different chapters right now that are running reoccurring monthly events on every topic you can think of associated with real estate. So I see tons of investors out there, and I see a small percentage of them actually succeeding on a larger scale. Maybe they succeed on, you know, a per property deal here and there or something like that. But being able to be financially free from real estate takes another level of understanding to get it to that point. Unless you just happen to have a bunch of cash and you're buying properties all cash and making your money somewhere else and investing it there. But if you're starting from scratch, there's a big disconnect between the number of people that can actually go and be successful, because there's so many levels of knowledge that you have to have. It's not just about fixing and flipping or lending or multifamily. It's about all the little auxiliary things that go into investing as a whole: the tax and legal structure side, the self-directed retirement side, the property management, insurance side, running a business, how to do proper accounting and make sure that you have budget versus actual on every project, that make sure that you have, you know, what your real true cash flows are versus what your projected budget is on your buy and hold assets. You know, all of these different auxiliary ancillary things that go into this, including creative financing. And, you know, there's so many ways to make money in real estate. And the more tools you have in your tool belt, the more successful you're going to be. So I'm developing a complete 6-month course that's basically 25 weeks long. And I'm going to be charging about $1,000 a month for 6 months, but it's hands-on learning, 4 classes every month with live Q&A. And afterwards, once you complete the course, we're actually going to be able to offer lending to those people, even if they might be newbies, because they went through our course and they have our guidance there. In addition to that, we're going to provide them deal flow. I have so many deals that I can't take down myself. And, you know, I got like 30 flips happening right now myself, and, you know, COVID's happening and all this stuff. And I'm like, I don't want to take the risk on more deals, even though they're coming to me consistently. And so being able to provide those to other people, it's a small income source for me, but at the same time, I'm able to provide them deals that make sense on the back end. So adding that little deal flow piece obviously makes up for everything right away. I just don't want to do it and you know, sell properties to people that they're going to go rehab without setting them up for success, because they're not going to be able to succeed long-term, especially if they're new. The contractor is going to steal from them. The management company is going to steal from them. Their team members will steal from them. There's like 1,000 things, as you know, that can go wrong that, you know, you have to have proper segregation of duties. It's one thing I learned living in Cali and then for my whole life, and then investing in every other market and never investing in Cali. I did one flip in Cali. That's it. One flip. So, you know, you learn how to mitigate risk from outside team members by having secondary checks and balances and proper documentation and knowing what your due diligence is. And so I'm setting people up for that, to do that. And I'm only going to be taking people that are really interested in making sure that, and actually building this cash flow stream for themselves long term and this business to do that. So I'm pretty excited about it. It's probably going to launch in March sometime. So if anybody is interested, they can email me afterwards. So
yeah, that's awesome. Could you throw out your email address or your website address just while we're talking about it?
Yeah, it's invest@ocgproperties.com. So and my website is ocgproperties.com.
It's that time of the show for a segment called Best Deal, Worst Deal, where we talk about real estate transactions that you've done in the past so that others can learn from your knowledge and expertise. So Matthew, with that said, what is the best real estate deal that you've done?
So one of the best ones was, there's been a lot of them, but one of the best ones was I bought a 19-unit building in Memphis for about $147,000. And it was a shell. I mean, the thing was, you know, just gutted. It didn't. And what's cool about that is that, you know, I was into it for about $950,000 after construction on that deal. And it took about 1.5 years to get fully completed and up and running and with occupancy, but we had no utility bills. We were able to build this thing perfect so that, you know, it was really, really nice. And we ended up selling it at about a 6.5 cap for about $2.8 million. After that, which was a huge win for us, of course, in the beginning. And that led to a lot more multifamilies. And I call it real estate crack. You know, once you get one good deal, you're hooked on it forever, you know? So, yeah. But, you know, at the end of the day, you know, that was probably one of my best deals. One of my coolest deals was doing a seller financed wraparound mortgage where I bought and sold the house on a double close in the same day, got seller financing, put $5,000 down on that seller finance transaction on a 10-year loan, and then went through and resold it for $20,000 more on another seller finance note with $10,000 down instead, and basically carried the paper and made the spread the entire time. It was a smaller deal, but just being able to do that and time the notes at the same time for maturity and everything was just a really interesting strategy that you could do and made cash flow from a note, you know?
So yeah. Wow, that's awesome. So just real quick, back to the first Memphis project that you mentioned, do you have any advice for other people looking to get into a project like that? I mean, there's a lot of risk there buying a shell. So what's kind of the number one piece of advice for executing a project like that?
So the first thing is understanding every cost, understanding how to analyze a multifamily detail. So every cost that goes into it on the cash flow side, on the back end, and then what that's going to perform at with property management in place. And then on the front end, it's making sure you really, really, really understand that renovation and you have a very good contractor that's vetted, that comes with multiple referrals. I learned some fun lessons on that deal with my contractor. He actually got the job done, but about 6 months late from what he should have been done. And he called me about 3 months into the project and he said, "Hey, I'm trying to get qualified to do this large commercial job and I needed to get licensed and bonded and I need to have an audit of my financial statements to do that. And or I need to get bonded," and he was already licensed. And so I said, "Okay, no problem. Where is your financials now?" And he said, "Well, if I have money in the bank, then I'm okay." And I'm going, "Oh, well, you're never getting a single dime of my money. It's going directly to your subs immediately after that." And it clicked right there that the biggest problem is that a lot of these team members do not know how to manage their money, do not necessarily know how to manage their time correctly. So having rehab manager that manages this GC and sets expectation up front and putting proper things in place for performance, like performance incentives and bonuses for getting it done faster, and delay disincentives as well. So maybe you give them an extra month from what they say they're going to be done by, and then afterwards you start charging a fee, you know, so you learn some fun lessons that way. But the construction piece of it is key, because that can way overrun. People right now are way underestimating their construction because they don't realize that construction costs have gone through the roof right now. Wood has tripled in cost. So, you know, it's things like that that are going to continue, and you have to be careful and get a little bit better margin for those increases and things that are unknown on different aspects. Like right now, I'm on my flips, I want at least a 15% margin versus previous was 10, you know, on some of my flips to get those things done, you know, and it's just because costs are going up. I want to have more buffer and involved in every project.
Yeah. Yeah. I love it. That's great advice. And Matthew, what would you say is the worst deal that you've done?
I loaned a guy. So, and you learn a lot of lessons in your worst deal. So I loaned a guy in Kansas City $2 million on about 5 different projects at the same time. And he lied to me to my face on a Zoom meeting for about a year as he was finishing all of these projects. And I became too nice. Instead of saying, "No, screw you, pay me, you know, I'm foreclosing now," you know, I was, "Hey, we're going to get through this together. I'll fund a second on this thing to make sure that we can get the full funds for the project." Not realizing he was lying at every single turn, even providing fake pictures and providing, you know, fake receipts and all that kind of stuff and everything else. And so it ended up costing me about $300,000, you know. So, and that hurt really bad. You know, I didn't let any of my investors, again, take the hit. That's one of the biggest rules there, is never let your investors lose money on a deal. And so I ended up taking the hits myself on those deals. And, you know, you learn the fun stuff with that. I had money in the deal too. I always put money in my deals. But looking at that, that was a big wake-up call for me, because it made me realize you can't be that nice sometimes. You have to be able to say, "No, this is the rule. Not everybody's going to like me at the end of the day." You know, maybe it was coming from high school, you're going to getting picked on in junior high. I wanted to be liked or something. I don't know. But You get what I'm saying. I mean, you go through these things where you're trying to make sure everybody's cool, so that, because you think that that might be the best beneficial way to make sure you get out of that in one piece and you don't have problems. But at some point, you have to change team members and say, "No, that's the wrong team member for me. I'm not getting what I need. And let me shift and, you know, foreclose on that deal in particular, or find a different contractor, or make that decision faster when someone is costing you money." Because that's really the reason why I lost money, is it lasted way too long versus me just saying, "No, nip it in the bud right away and get out of this." You see what I mean?
Gotcha. Gotcha. So is that the number one learning lesson from that experience, is just to put your foot down sooner, or have you also changed anything as far as vetting new people as they want to work with you?
Oh yeah. Now we go through, I mean, that guy, we did a background check on and everything came back fine, but you know, we do additional checks now on people. We go through and, you know, ask for tax returns in some cases, depending on the person. I definitely will not lend someone, unless it's a commercial deal or something, $2 million in the first batch sure. anymore. It's more like, "Yeah, we'll do one deal and see how we like you and how you communicate and things like that." And that saved me massively, just doing one deal with somebody in the beginning on a very new relationship, because you know right away, are they coming correct with their rehab bids in detail? And are they communicating correctly? Are they providing you details every single time? And we have inspections that go out on every single project now versus relying on anything at all from the ground operator, you know? So, and you know, because of the picture thing and all that stuff, you know, I'm looking at this going, wow, the kitchen looks great. And no, it was not great. It was gutted still, you know? So yeah, you get some fun. And then I find out afterwards that nothing was filed on this person yet legally. So that didn't show up on their background check, but they had multiple people that were getting ready to sue him for the same type of thing. So, you know, you learn afterwards, just because it doesn't show up on the background check doesn't necessarily mean that you're all gravy and everything's fine. You want to really, really vet these people and take your time, you know?
Yeah. Wow. Well, Matthew, we're a little bit short on time here, but just one final question. So you've been through a lot through 2008, 2009. It seems like you've learned a ton about the industry, the market, maybe even about yourself. What's changed for you right now in the current market cycle with COVID and everything? You kind of hinted on being a little bit more cautious right now. What are your thoughts on the current market conditions?
So overall, and you know, we can all be wrong here, of course. We're all just looking at the data and trying to look at what we think is going to happen. You know, I see a very large amount of foreclosures that could come. I think last time I checked, it was like around 3 million people that were on in forbearance. I think a percentage of those will pay up because they just didn't want to pay. A very large percentage of those, I believe, will get worked out based on the last time that they, in 2008, when everything crashed and they learned how to do workouts and things like that. I think that will happen. You know, I know other people that have taken the forbearance and just said, hey, I'm done here. I'm ready to get back on paying again. And the bank just, no problem. We'll put it on the back immediately, put it on the back. And so I think a big percentage of those will happen and will get worked out down the line. I think, you know, with Biden being president, I think the eviction moratorium may extend. They may offer more incentives. We know both parties are going to keep printing money. And so inflation is going to happen in the long run. In the short run, there might be a deflation, because can they print enough money for, you know, the economy that's not running at all, you know, and small businesses being decimated. We've never been through a situation like this. Can they keep printing to stop that deflation? I don't think that they can print enough unless you're going to have hyperinflation happen. And so I think we'll have a downturn in the market at some point, depending, but is it real estate centric? You know, it doesn't seem like that's the case. There's good financing out there right now, quality financing that's actually pushing the property values up and things like that. But overall, I see some faltering. I think the Fed is going to keep trying to kick the can down the road and doing stimulus across the board. And it may help people survive to a degree, but $600, we all know, doesn't do anything with people. And they're probably gambling it on the stock market, yeah, you know, in the first place, based on the numbers. But I think the stock market's geared for a dive at some point. We'll see how long they can last with printing money and people putting their money into the stock market to do that. In the meantime, you know, it's a false economy right now in my eyes. I'm not seeing, you know, real growth across the board. And I think people are in for a wide awakening when massive inflation happens in basic goods and services and things like that, when wages don't rise to that comparison. So that's what I think is in the long run. In the short run, I think we'll have some short run deflation in the next year or two, depending on how long they try to kick the can down the road.
Yeah, yeah, I agree. I love it. And I also think that the best hedge against inflation is cash flowing real estate.
Yeah, just make sure you have enough margin to counterbalance if there's a 10% drop in rents, you know?
Yeah.
So that way you're break even at least there, so you don't lose money in the long run, because that's all short term stuff.
Yep, so. Yep, absolutely. Awesome. Matthew, where can others go to connect with you and learn more about what you're up to?
They can go to my website at ocgproperties.com, or they can email me at invest@ocgproperties.com. And I'll be coming out with some new content on a consistent weekly basis, starting in about another week or two.
Awesome. So. Great. Well, thanks again for taking the time. I really appreciate it, and have a great rest of your day.
You too. Thanks, man.
Hey, everybody. It's Mark Allen Kenny. If you're interested in apartment building investments, schedule a call with me so we can have a chance to chat. My company is focused on growing your family's wealth with apartment building investments. So let's hop on a quick call and talk about your investment goals and see if we're a good fit. Find out more at stellarinvestmentgroup.com.